أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، بارئ الخلائق أجمعين، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين، سيدنا ونبينا وحبيب قلوبنا وطبيب نفوسنا وشفيع ذنوبنا أبي القاسم محمد. ثم الصلاة والسلام على آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المظلومين، واللعنة الله على أعدائهم أجمعين من يوم عداوتهم إلى يوم الدين. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى في كتابه وهو أصدق القائلين، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: فأقم وجهك للدين حنيفا، فطرة الله التي فطر الناس عليها، لا تبديل لخلق الله، ذلك الدين القيم ولكن أكثر الناس لا يعلمون. صلوات الله محمد.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Tonight is our ninth discussion on freeing the butterfly within. And tonight we want to talk about fitra and tabi'ah in society and in governments. To begin with, we want to say that each one of us is an individual, but we come together as individuals and create families. Then these families go on and create tribes, ethnicities, and these tribes and ethnicities create neighborhoods, which create communities. And these communities then come together and form governments. And the world moves on the basis of some individuals within these governments, within these communities, that vie with each other for positions of leadership so that they may guide and lead the rest of that society. And this is because humans by nature cannot do without leadership. It is within our fitra that we want to either lead or be led, that we need an imam, that we need a guide. That is why even the Kharijites, when they opposed Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and said, Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad, la hukma illa lillah, that no one is our leader except Allah. Then when they sat amongst themselves, they said, well, now it's time for Salat. Who is going to lead the prayers? We need to collect donations to prepare our army to fight Ali. Who is going to collect the money? Who is going to decide the strategy? So at every decision in our lives, there has to be someone to take leadership and the rest will follow. And that is why we see this idea of leadership in all these different stages from individuality onwards. Even within a family, there is sometimes a contest for power, and typically one might be the one leading the family, or there might be a sharing of power where one family member makes certain decisions and the other one takes charge of other matters within that family. Then within communities there will be leaders, within neighborhoods there will be leaders, within governments there will be leaders. Now, for human beings to attain this perfection that we have been talking about, this spiritual metamorphosis to take place, for human beings to complete their destiny, it is necessary that their leaders be fitra oriented, that their leaders be driven by attachment to Allah rather than attachment to other than Allah. And the reason why it is necessary is because, as we have said, fitra is loyal, it is fixed on one principle, and that principle is surrender to Allah. Therefore, all decisions that will be made first to see what does Allah have to say about this matter. If the leader is fitra oriented, he will always make decisions based on Allah's will, and by doing so he will therefore be helping those he leads to evolve spiritually. Tabi'ah, we said, has no loyalty. Tabi'a is driven by desire. Tabi'a is fluid in nature. It will take the shape of the vessel that contains it, just like water. If you put it in a round container, it will take a round shape. If tomorrow you put it in a square container, it will take a square shape. It therefore has no loyalty as such. So when the leader is tabi'a driven, he will not look at what Allah has to say. He will first see that my tabi'a seeks fame, seeks prestige, seeks wealth. Therefore, whatever will help me get that, I will govern based on that. I will first see what it is that is to my benefit, and then others will comply to that. Now, the human ego is very clever. It knows that tabi'a does not understand higher principles like justice and freedom and human rights and the kind of things that we crave after our physical needs have been met. So what it does is, it speaks of the values of fitrah, but it does not speak of its own nature or of tabi'a. In other words, it masks tabi'a with something that looks like fitrah but is not fitrah. It does by speaking of good values, but does not speak of the opposite. And I will give you examples of this. Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, salawatullahi wa salamu alayhi, shows us this idea that when a government or a leader is driven by tabi'a, they will speak of noble values, they will speak of justice, but they will not speak of injustice. They will speak of freedom, but they will not speak of tyranny. Because if they do that, you might notice that these qualities apply and fit perfectly on them. So they will mask that and hide that. He unmasked the Banu Umayya by saying, "Inna Bani Umayya utlaqu an-nasa ta'lim al-iman." وَلَمْ يُطْلَقُوا تَعْلِيمَ الشِّرْكِ لِكَيْ إِذَا حَمَلُوهُمْ لَمْ يَعْرِفُوهُ. The Banu Umayya allowed people to talk about Iman, but they did not allow them to talk about shirk, so that when people see it, they do not recognize it. And this is why today you will find there are many people who claim to love the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, but they don't follow them. Because they have one side, they don't have the other. They are very happy to praise the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam and to talk of them highly. But if you ask them to curse the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, they will hesitate. Yeah. If you ask them to curse those who hurt the Ahlul Bayt alayhimus salam, they will hesitate. Yes. Because there is a generation after generation of this indoctrination that you only talk of good values, but whatever is wrong, you mask it, you hide it, you do not bring it out. And this is why many of us get confused. We know the truth, but we do not know falsehood. You see, after the wafat of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi wa sallam, the Muslims never fought amongst themselves in battle. There was never a civil war until the Battle of Jamal during the time of Amir al-Mu'mineen. That was the first civil war in Islam. So for the first time, Muslims found themselves standing in battle against their own brethren, against other Muslims. The Muslims of Kufa were standing against the Muslims of Basra. Here they had Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. There they had eminent companions like Talha and Zubair and the wife of the Prophet Aisha. So a man comes to Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam and says to him, "O Ali, I love you, I follow you, you are my imam. But if you think that I will raise my sword and cut my fellow Muslim brother, you are mistaken. These are Muslims, they pray, they fast. I will not fight and kill my fellow Muslim brother." What was the reply that Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam gave him? He said, "You do not have to fight for me, but this much know, you have seen above yourself but not below yourself. You have seen truth and recognized it, but you have not seen falsehood and recognized it." In other words, you have seen me, truth, and recognized it, but you have not seen falsehood and recognized it. If the Prophet brought the Qur'an, I am the tafsir of Qur'an. If he fought for Islam, I will fight for Iman. So it is as important to know injustice as it is to know justice. Let's bring that into modern context. Look at the Wahhabis. They seek to present themselves as the champions of Tawheed, isn't it?
Yeah.
They will talk to you about Tawheed and monotheism for hours. You mention anything other than Allah, shirk. Bid'ah, bid'ah, shirk. Allah, Allah only. Allah, Allah. If today outside the mosque, I put a banner or a sign and I write on the mosque, قَالَ رَسُولُ اللَّهِ حُسَيْنٌ مِنِّي وَأَنَا مِنَ الْحُسَيْنِ, they will say, shirk. This is house of Allah. Don't do it. But when they build a clock tower over the Kaaba, and they write a big Allah on it, underneath they write, donated by the king of blah, blah, blah. Is that not shirk? Because they talk of Tawheed, but they do not talk of the other side. If you ever meet a Wahhabi Sheikh, tell him, oh Sheikh, if you ask him, tell me about Allah or Tawheed, he will talk to you for as long as you want. Tell him, tell me about the Muslim caliphs who ruled before us. Tell me about the oppressions that were committed by the Banu Umayyah and Banu Abbas. He will never tell you. He will either tell you those narrations are all lies, or he will tell you, this matter we should leave it for Allah to decide on the Day of Judgment. Why should we get involved? Hussein, Yazid, Allah will decide about them. Why? Because if he admits and he talks about oppression and injustice, and he has to say that Yazid was Sharibul Khamr, that Yazid was a drunk and a gambler and played with dogs and monkeys, then he cannot call Yazid Amirul Mu'mineen. And he needs to call Yazid Amir al-Mu'mineen. So he will talk of Tawheed, but he will not talk of Shirk. He will talk of Adala, but he will not talk of Dhulm. This is a sign of a Tabi'ah-oriented government. So we need to understand that Fitra-oriented leaders work on a fixed principle. Because they are only concerned about what Allah wants, they are as comfortable talking about injustice and condemning it as they are comfortable talking about justice and praising it. Whereas tabia-oriented leaders, because they are fluid, they have no loyalty, they are flexible on their principles. Therefore, they will only talk and praise that which is good. They will not talk of that which is ugly, because they seek to mask it with that which is good. A tabia-oriented government or society will only be driven by material needs. Because tabi'ah by its nature is concerned with physical pleasure and material pleasure. That is why when a government is primarily tabi'ah, the yardstick of people's happiness is largely the economy. And the leaders of that government are only concerned with ensuring the government, the economy is doing well. Why? Because good economy means people are happy in their physical needs. Their what they seek for their physical needs and pleasure is being met. As long as the people are happy with their physical needs, they will keep me in power. I will continue to get votes. I will continue to get re-elected. And this is a typical sign of a tabia-oriented government, that when you vote, you do not look what is the principle on which this individual stands. What are his moral values? Does he have integrity? You merely see, can he reduce my taxes? Can he create more jobs? Any scandal he's involved in, that's his personal problem. I don't care the values and principles on which the country and the government I live in is based. All I care is that I continue getting my benefits, that I continue getting my physical needs being met. So, governments who are tabia-oriented know that this is people's need, and that most people, because they are driven by addictions and attachments to physical pleasure and material needs, they keep them drugged with that. They continue to pander towards that tabia of people. What is it you want that will keep you happy and silent so that you will not ask for questions that have to do with fitrah? That you will not ask, why is my government giving my tax money to support an unjust government to bomb innocent civilians in another land? You should not concern yourself with that. Stay busy with your work. Think about how to make more money, how to get the latest gadgets, how to be happier in your physical needs. What is it you want? You want us to allow abortion? No problem. You just vote for me. We cancel abortion. What does Allah think about it? Doesn't matter. What else do you want? You don't want capital punishment? No capital punishment. You want gays to have the right for marriage? No problem. We give you that. So whatever your needs are, as long as your tabi'a is met and whatever you see as a physical need is being fulfilled, I will give it to you. So long as you vote for me. We said tabi'a wants reward. So it becomes, you scratch my back, I scratch your back. You want physical needs, I will make sure you have whatever you want. I will change the rules, disregard what God wants. Just don't let your fitrah speak. I give you your physical needs, you give me my physical needs, which is the power that I seek. Now, the moment your fitrah begins to speak, I am one individual, there are hundreds of you here, I am leading you. I'm trying to make sure that I'm catering to the majority here and fulfilling their physical needs so that I remain here above you in power. The moment a group of you stand up and your fitrah begins speaking and saying, wait a minute, you are keeping us drugged and addicted. What about injustice? What about freedom? What about human rights? Now, I have two choices. One is I can suppress you and oppress you because tabi'a flees from pain and seeks pleasure and fights for survival. One way to fight for survival is to squish and to kill any opposition. So I can oppress you. But if I'm smart and I've seen what happened to Saddam and what happened to Gaddafi and what happened to others, then I know that if I oppress you, it's not going to work, because if I oppress a group here, it's only a matter of time before a group stands here and starts shouting the same thing. Because fitrah is infectious. Once one starts, others will start speaking. So the better option is, instead of suppressing and oppressing you, because I am tabia oriented and your fitrah is waking up, I bring in something that looks like fitrah. I mask tabi'a with a wrapper and a cover of fitrah so that you begin to think that I have given you and answered your fitrah. Okay. People by their nature in a fitrah driven system, people want to be led by a leader who is fitrah oriented. In their essence, in their divine nature, they want a leader who is surrendered to Allah, who is concerned more about what Allah wants and not even by their own will, because they know this is necessary for their spiritual growth. So they want justice is important to them, freedom is important to them. If a leader is fitrah oriented, on the other hand, we talked about a leader being tabi'a oriented, where he masks tabi'a with fitrah just to fool the masses. If a leader was fitrah oriented, whether it is at a community or whether it is a government or whether it is a family or a neighborhood, whatever it may be, he will never bend, because fitrah does not bend, it is on a fixed principle. He will never change this principle of his, that I will not violate my surrender to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. If the masses are all tabi'a oriented and he alone is fitrah oriented, he will still not bend. What he will do is he will give people a choice and say, oh people, you either join me and surrender with me and become fitrah oriented. Or he will say what Ibrahim said, Ya qawmi inni bari'um mimma tushrikun. Oh my people, I disassociate myself from what you associate with God. So the addictions that you seek, I will not be your leader and fulfill that need for you. If you wish me to lead you, it will have to be fitrah oriented. Okay? So a fitrah oriented will not bend on this principle. Now, we said the tabi'a oriented leaders will cover tabi'a with a fitrah mask. And you will remember that discussion of Musa alayhi salam, in the drinking of the real milk versus something that is not his mother's milk. What a tabi'ah, when a tabi'ah oriented leader masks tabi'ah with fitrah, what he does is he gives us a pacifier that looks like fitrah. Now pacifiers, as you know, can be very addictive. So it looks like we are being given freedom. It looks like we are being given choice, freedom of choice, but that is not really the aim behind it. The aim is to drug and addict, and that is why you will notice that it is only the matters that serve our physical needs and give us unlimited and unrestricted pleasure that is given to us in the name of fitrah. For example, when we want to have nightclubs, when we want to have massage parlors, when we want to have beer stores, when we want to have unlimited access to pornography, the government will give that to you. Because that keeps you drugged, that keeps you addicted to your desires, that ensures your fitrah does not hold the rein on your tabi'ah. And if you can be addicted to material pleasure, then you will not, your fitrah will not wake up. If your fitrah does not wake up, you will not oppose those in power. But if your fitrah was to wake up, and if you were to demand something that did not have to do with physical pleasure, then suddenly those very same values that you are being told, human rights, freedom of choice, will be taken away. For example, if I was to say, I want to do a research on the Holocaust, for example, I am not denying the Holocaust took place. I am not saying that innocent Jews were not killed. Millions of them were killed. But I want to research, I want to find out, because I know there are many Orthodox Jews today who are opposed to the Zionist state. So I want to find out what those innocent Jews who were killed and these ones who are in power now, are these the descendants of those or are these hijackers of those? I just want to find out. And there were millions of others who died in the Second World War. I want to find out. I want to see the numbers. I cannot do that. If I question that, I will be thrown behind bars. Now where is freedom of speech? Where is human choice? Because this is fitrah that does not keep me addicted, that does not keep me drugged to my tabi'ah. So it is a mask that makes it appear that you are being given human right, that you are being given freedom, but in reality it is a drugging of tabi'ah. So this is a matter that we need to make sure that we are not fooled by. If you can recite a salawat al amr. Again, let's make it relevant now. The United States sees itself as the world's policemen. They are the champions of human rights and democracy, isn't it? Anything that happens in the world, no one else speaks, but they immediately issue a statement, isn't it? For the past several decades, and the American people are wonderful people. They are some of the most charitable people. When there are disasters in the world, they will raise an enormous amount of donations. I'm talking here about the government, not about the people. So as a state, as a country, they have always talked about human rights and democracy and championed it. They didn't start talking about it now. From the time we were children, they've been talking about it. You wonder that all these decades that passed, all these monarchies in the Middle East that were oppressing their people, why did they not speak against them? Because it was not convenient. Now look at how a tabi'ah government operates. As soon as the fitrah of the people of Egypt woke up and they began saying, we want rights, we want human rights, we want the same thing that the American people have. We want equal opportunity. What did the champion of democracy do? They waited. They waited and they waited. And the world kept saying, world policemen, what's your decision? Are you supporting Hosni Mubarak? Are you supporting the people? Tell us. They waited. They're waiting to see who's winning. Once it became clear, they said, we support the people. Human rights. Human rights. Because it's a done deal now. There's nothing you can do to stop it. Very good. Very good. You supported human rights. But unfortunately, the people of Bahrain wanted human rights. Now when the people of Bahrain began saying, the same champions kept quiet because now we have a navy fleet there. So we cannot say. Do you see how tabi'ah is fluid? You put it in a round container, it becomes round. You put it in a square, it becomes square. It is no fixed principle. It does not stand on a principle. It is hypocritical. It wears a mask of fitrah. But it is tabi'ah.
Yeah.
So then, a little skirmish takes place in Iran. A few people stand up. There's a bit of a protest. A few people are arrested. And the president himself, Obama, comes on TV and says, and he mocks Iran and says, look at the hypocrisy of Iran. They speak against human rights in Bahrain and they oppress their own people. Very good. Human rights, democracy. Now, what goes around comes around. I watch TV and I see an American police officer casually walking in front of students at the university and pepper spraying them.
Yeah, just like that.
Just like that, casually. The same champion of democracy keeps quiet.
Yeah.
Again, you see that fluidity. There is no fixed principle. That was the right time. If he was a fitra-oriented leader, he would have stood and said, this is wrong. We talk of democracy. We talk of human rights. It cannot happen on our own land. Can you imagine if this had happened in Iran and an Iranian police officer had pepper sprayed people? This would have gone all the way to the United Nations. Perhaps even a war would have been justified on that. So tabi'ah wears a mask, it has no loyalty. And this goes all the way back to even the time of the Pharaoh. Fir'aun was a tabi'i government. And the Quran attests to this. In Surah Taha, Chapter 20, verse 64. When Fir'aun was preparing for the showdown with Musa, and he gathered people from all over Egypt and beyond, because he was so confident, I will win this. He issued a statement before the showdown. This is Surah Taha, chapter 20, verse 64. He said, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنِ اسْتَعْلَى. Whoever has the upper hand today, he shall rightfully be the successful one. So that was the principle that he declared. But when he lost, he forgot that he had said, قَدْ أَفْلَحَ مَنِ اسْتَعْلَى. He said, this was a plot you plotted. This Musa, إِنَّهُ لَكَبِيرُكُمْ. You plotted this together. الَّذِي عَلَّمَكُمُ السَّحْرِ. He is the one who taught you this magic. And this plotting was done beforehand. وَمَكْرٌ مَكَرْتُمُوهُ فِي الْمَدِينَةِ. You see the same principle that he first speaks and agrees. This is the rule. Whoever wins is right. But when he loses, now I will redefine what is right. Because the principle is very fluid. When my own people fight for rights and say we have no jobs, we are suffering in poverty, only 1% has the wealth, 99% has poverty, and we wish to occupy Wall Street until we get our rights, they are removed. Why? Health and safety issues. As far as I remember, there was a lot more health and safety issues in Tahrir Square, but you supported it. There was a lot more health and safety issues in Libya, but you fought a proxy war there as well. So the issue is not giving human beings their rights or freedom. The issue is, I need to stay in power. And I will change the rules and the laws as it pleases me, as long as I can fool you that what I am doing is human rights. I will create a commission of inquiry, I will create this council, I will create that council to justify what I do. When fitra speaks, people in whom fitra is awakened, they will support it. But people who are tabi'ah driven will oppose it. And Fir'aun was the same. When Musa alayhi salam showed his miracles, the magicians submitted because their fitra was alive, so they recognized it. Fir'aun instead immediately began to threaten them. He said, قَالَ لَإِنِ اتَّخَذْتَ إِلَهًا غَيْرِ لَأَجْعَلَنَّكَ مِنَ الْمَسْجُونِينَ. This is Surah Shu'ara, chapter 26, verse 29. That if you take any god besides me as your god, I will imprison you. And oppressors work on three principles. When your fitra first wakes up, they will ignore you. If you continue shouting and your fitra continues shouting, then they will ridicule you. And if it continues shouting, then they will oppress you. You look at this at the time of Fir'aun, same thing. When Musa alayhi salam came first, he ignored him. Then he made fun of him and mocked him. And then he began oppressing. You look at the time of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi wa sallam. The same thing. The Quraysh first used to ignore him. He and Imam Ali, they used to stand near the Kaaba with Sayyidah Khadija. They used to pray Salat. Ignore them. It's just they're young people. They've got this cult going. It will die out. Leave them. Then when it got more, they began to make fun of them. When it became even more, that's when the oppression and the torture began. And you will find that even now, if you've been following the news, what happened with the Occupy movements and protests? First, they were ignored. The news didn't cover it at all. And then when they covered, they started making fun of them. These are hippies. And then they began saying, this is not acceptable. You have to get out of here. This is a clear sign of tyranny. Now, capitalism says only the foolish and the backward believe in God. Communism says religion is the opium of the masses. Communism has collapsed. Capitalism is crumbling and falling apart. But Allah is still there. Religion is still there and will remain so. Why? Why? Because you are wired for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Fitratullahi allati fatara an-nasa 'alayha la tabdila li khalqi Allah. O tyrants, you will not be able to change this wiring. This is hard coded. This is programmed in the soul of insan. You will either commit oppression or you will mask your oppression with fitra. But fitra will keep coming out again and again because it is hard coded. It cannot be suppressed.
Ya Ali.
So, dhulm and tyranny can only twist fitra, it can hide fitra, but it cannot kill fitra. Fitra also wants human rights. Fitra also wants to. And so what tabi'a does is, in order to convince the masses, we said it pretends like fitra. And if you look at history, that is why you will see that tyrants will also have a court of law. Before Abu Dharr was exiled, there was a court held to decide that he needs to be exiled. Before Maitham was put on a tree and his tongue was cut because of his love for Ali, a court was held to justify that he needs to be killed. Before Hussein alayhi salam was killed in Karbala, a mufti had to sign a fatwa and write a fatwa that it is lawful to kill Hussein ibn Ali. Why? Why couldn't Yazid just go and kill? Because he needed to legitimize it so that people's fitra does not wake up. Okay. Fir'aun was the same. Before Fir'aun tried to kill Musa, he held a court session. And this is in Surah Mu'min, chapter 40, verse 26. وَقَالَ فِرْعَوْنِي ذَرُونِي أَقْتُلْ مُوسَى وَلْيَدْءُ رَبَّهُ إِنِّي أَخَافُ أَنْ يُبَدِّلَ دِينَكُمْ وَأَنْ يُظْهِرَ فِي الْأَرْضِ فَسَادًا. Let me kill Musa, O people. And then he justified his case. Why? He said, I am afraid this Musa will make you change your religion from what you have been following all this time from your forefathers. And I am afraid that he will spread mischief on the earth. He is accusing him of fasad. And he is the fasid. Because when you accuse somebody of fasad, you put a mask. And this issue of labeling is how people also convince others. You see, if I call a Shia, then people will start wondering, Shia of who? Shia is a follower. Shia of Ali, where Ali was a good person. So don't call them Shia, call them Rafidi, renegades, so that people are turned away from them. In Surah Al-Baqarah, chapter 2, verse 11 and 12, and I'm sure many of you are familiar with this verse, Allah shows us that when a leader is tabi'a oriented, he is blind. He is so blind that even when you tell him and you show him he is wrong, he cannot see he is wrong. He thinks he is right and you are wrong. وَإِذَا قِيلَ لَهُمْ لَا تُفْسِدُوا فِي الْأَرْضِ. When it is said to them, do not cause corruption and mischief on the earth, قَالُوا إِنَّمَا نَحْنُ مُسْلِحُونَ. They say, no, we are reformers. We are fighting for democracy. أَلَا إِنَّهُمْ هُمُ الْمُفْسِدُونَ وَلَكِنْ لَا يَشْعُرُونَ. Indeed, indeed, it is they who are the mischief makers, but they do not even realize this. Because they call themselves reformers, they call themselves champions of justice, and they call everyone else rebels, renegades, fundamentalists, terrorists, radicals. The same idea of labeling. Once I call myself a reformer and I believe I'm a reformer, now I lose the ability to question and see, am I fitra oriented or am I tabi'a oriented? Today, when the government of Bahrain, with the help of the Saudis, when they kill the Shias in Bahrain, they do not say we are killing and oppressing and torturing because they are Shia, even if that may be the reason. They say because we are trying to contain mischief, because we are trying to restore order. Why? Because they have seen that other dictators, when they tyrannize and say we are oppressing because we want to oppress, they do not last long. So they need to mask the tabi'ah with fitra and justify it by saying we are restoring order. Okay, so a tabi'ah oriented leader will only survive by using fitra oriented slogans. He cannot survive unless he uses fitra oriented slogans. A fitra oriented leader will always move towards tawheed. He will always move to the pleasure of Allah. A tabi'ah oriented leader at any level of human society will move to the pleasure of people, will always look at his own power and control and not look at surrender to Allah. Tawheed negates everything else except Allah. Shirk and dhulm does the opposite. It is not compatible with self-negation. It conflicts it with that, because there is my own will, my own desire, and then there is Allah's will and Allah's desire. So we now have two separate systems. We have a tabi'ah oriented system and a fitra oriented system. These are two different movements. These are two different economies. These are two different ways of life. These are two different lives. These are two different deaths. Fitra is first and foremost concerned with death. It first tackles the issue of death and then the issue of life. Fitra does not rest until the fear of death has been overcome. Thereafter, it concerns itself with life because it knows this is temporary. Tabi'ah, on the other hand, it swallows up the self. It does not think of death. It believes there is no death. It sees itself as a god. It does not want to surrender, whereas fitra wants to surrender. It is for this reason that you will see that world powers constantly try to dominate each other, because the leaders are worms and caterpillars. They are not butterflies. They only want reward, they want wealth, they want power, they want control, they want oil. A butterfly leader, that we said another name for him is Al-Insan Al-Kamil, is not interested in these things. When Amirul Mu'mineen Ali ibn Abi Talib salawatullahi wa salamah, when he took the leadership, the Khilafah, and people said Ali is greedy for power, he said, "Wallahi ladunyakum hadhihi ahwanu fi aini min iraqi khinzir fi yadi majdhum." I swear by Allah, this world of yours has less value to Ali than the leftover bone of a pig in the hand of a leper. "Ladunyakum hadhihi azhadu indi min aftati anzin." This world of yours has less worth to me than the sneeze of a goat. This is the eloquence, the fasahat and the balaghat of Ali ibn Abi Talib. Ali is greedy for your world. So a fitra oriented leader will lead only because Allah has charged him with this task. So in surrender to Allah he leads. He is not greedy for it. Whereas a fitra oriented leader will do the opposite. To ask a butterfly to live amongst worms is painful, because he feels caged. He feels he is living in hell. All the worms around him want to kill him, whereas he wants to be liberated. He wants to be free from that. He cannot tolerate living amongst worms. So fitra submits to Allah's will if Allah delegates that power to it. Whereas tabi'ah immediately and recklessly wants power. It does not stop to think. إِنَّا عَرَضْنَا الْأَمَانَةَ عَلَى السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ وَالْجِبَالِ فَأَبَيْنَا أَنْ يَحْمِلْنَهَا وَأَشْفَقْنَا مِنْهَا وَحَمَلَهَا الْإِنسَانِ إِنَّهُ كَانَ ظَلُومًا جَهُولًا. We gave this trust to represent us, Allah says. We gave this trust to represent us. We offered it to the heavens and the earth and the mountains, but they refused because they were afraid, they were apprehensive that we might not be able to fulfill this trust. But insan stood up immediately and said, I'll do it. Why? Because he is dhaluman jahula. He is unjust and he is reckless and he is ignorant in his tabi'ah. When we are tabi'ah oriented, we want power. Look at this again, make it relevant. You have been listening to the news. Look at Greece, look at Italy. The economy collapsing. Greece went bankrupt. Italy on the verge of collapse. So I'm thinking, I'm watching the news, right? And I'm hearing the Greek Prime Minister is going to step down and the country is in serious trouble. And I'm thinking, which fool or, you know, which idiot is now going to stand up and say, I'll be the Prime Minister? You know, why would you want to even touch this with a 10-foot pole? The country is bankrupt. But sure enough, one insan stands up and says, I'll be the Prime Minister. The same with Italy. If he steps down, there will be another one. If the country keeps sinking and austerity measures keep getting added and it goes even more bankrupt, there will still be another one to stand. If 50 fall, another will stand, because tabi'ah is greedy. It does not think, can I fix this? Can I bring fitrah into this? All it thinks is, as long as I have power, as long as I can satisfy some desire, let me enjoy it for a little bit. I want it and I want it now. We shall deal with anything later. What is the worst that will happen? I'll step down, some other fool will come and take over. This is how tabi'ah thinks. So in the past, when the world was not led by tabi'ah oriented people, those who are tabi'ah oriented were clearly identified to us. We called them rebels, we called them transgressors, we even called them atheists. Now, because they have come to power, we call them statesmen, we call them politicians, we call them champions of human rights and democracy. Not to say that all of them are like that. There are some very good politicians, there are some very good statesmen, there are some very good human rights activists and champions of democracy. But when you take leadership position, you can not only bring out titles for your enemy, but you can bring it for yourself. If you're an atheist, you can now call yourself a researcher or a scientist, so that it doesn't look as bad. But it is still tabi'ah oriented. So, if you can recite a salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. We ask a question, that a tabi'ah oriented government, despite having all these weapons of mass destruction, despite having both these options of oppressing people or masking their tabi'ah with fitrah, why are they still not able to dominate over the masses? Why do people's fitrah still wake up? Why? The reason is because when taghut, when rebels, when shaitan, when dhulm seeks to do this, when it tries to do this, the reason it cannot do this is because it is as futile as trying to prevent a fetus from being born. The fitrah is trying to be born within me. You cannot stop a fetus. If a woman is about to give birth and you say, I'm going to stop the child from coming out, then either the mother and the child will die or the child will come out. But you cannot stop it. So they try to stop it, but it cannot be stopped. It will emerge. It will come out because it is its nature to come out. Fitrah knows how to give birth. The purpose of fitrah is to keep giving birth and releasing butterflies into the heavens. Fitrah is the midwife of God. The purpose of fitrah is to give birth to butterflies that go to paradise. When tabi'ah sees now this child has been born and I cannot stop it, what is the next logical step? I couldn't stop this child from being born. So now I stop it from maturing. I stop it from realizing that I am tabi'ah and I want it to think it is fitrah. So now when this child of fitrah within me that has been born is crying for the milk of democracy, no, let me rephrase that. When the fitrah within me is crying for the milk of freedom, I stick the pacifier of Western democracy in its mouth and I say, suck on this for a bit. Now my fitrah begins thinking, this looks like freedom, so let's suck on it for a bit. That goes on for a bit. Then I say, wait a minute. There is no milk of freedom coming out of this. In fact, this smells of hypocrisy and double standards. I don't like this. So the baby of fitrah cries. It throws out that pacifier. Now it starts crying for the milk of justice. So we stick another pacifier of human rights. We stick another pacifier of fighting against terrorism. And the child keeps sucking, keeps throwing out, keeps crying. However, beware. I do not have to remind you how easy it is to get addicted to a pacifier.
Yeah.
If you have children in the house and you have taught them to suck on a pacifier, it is not easy to wean them off that. So once we have been addicted to physical pleasure, to comforts of the flesh, we will stop asking, our fitrah will stop asking for the milk of freedom and justice because we are addicted to the pacifier. That is why when I am used to living in this society and I look at the rest of the world and I say, I have clean water, the rest of the world does not have. I have utilities, the rest of the world does not have electricity 12 hours a day. I have high-speed internet, the rest of the world does not have this. Why rock the boat? I have healthcare. You notice this is all material, this is all physical. Why question where my government is spending money outside? Why talk about freedom and democracy? Because I'm addicted to this pacifier. It is pretending to be fitrah. It is pretending to be human rights. But my fitrah knows that this is not right. But I don't want to change it because I'm comfortable. If I do that now, I might have to live without electricity. I might lose my internet. I might not have as much water as I want. There may have to be some chaos and upheaval before this government changes and becomes fitrah oriented. I want to address one final question and then come to an end, inshallah. If fitrah is so hardwired in human beings that it always comes out, why then is it so difficult for fitrah to dominate tabi'ah? Why? The first answer is that fitrah is constructive. Tabi'ah is destructive. Construction requires effort. Construction requires coordination. Construction requires patience. Destruction does not require any of this. It is easy to do. It is easy to get addicted. But it is very difficult to come out of that addiction. Look at this in your own experience. Constructing a building may take months, but demolishing the building is very quick. Even when you're playing with your child at home, play with them with those blocks sometimes the way I do. Building that whole thing for me takes a long time. But when my little boy wants to destroy it, he just comes and knocks it. He doesn't need a lot of intelligence or logic or planning. And the whole thing crumbles. Tabi'ah is destructive. Getting addicted is very easy. Coming out of it is difficult. This is why fitrah struggles to dominate tabi'ah. That is one thing. The other thing is that tabi'ah is, in our physical sense, natural, because we live in a physical cage, in a physical body, in a material world. And we have been with tabi'ah from birth. Fitrah requires training. Fitrah requires maturity. To give you an analogy for this, it is like speaking and reading. Speaking comes naturally to children. Living with you, they learn how to speak. Reading does not come like that. You have to teach them to read. Children, until the age of 7 or 8 years old, they learn how to read, and then they read to learn. Above me here, there is Arabic calligraphy. There is a verse of Quran. If you do not know how to read Arabic, you can stare at this for 20 years, you will still not know what it says. But if I was to start talking to you in Arabic, again and again and again, after a while you will begin making out some words. And in time you will learn enough to get the gist of what I am saying. Tabi'ah is like speaking, it comes to you naturally. Fitrah has to be trained, it has to be taught. The reins have to be taken into the hands. Yet, despite that, the miracle of fitrah is this, that when it comes about, tabi'ah has to vanish. Because tabi'ah is like a dark room. Fitrah is the light that comes in and fills that dark room. And that is why the Quran says in Surah Al-Isra, chapter 7, verse 81, وَقُلْ جَاءَ الْحَقِّ وَزَهَقَ الْبَاطِلِ إِنَّ الْبَاطِلَ كَانَ زَهُوقًا. Tell them, When truth comes, falsehood has to vanish, because falsehood is a thing that is bound to perish. It is bound to vanish. It is this insan's foolishness that he does not realize you cannot destroy fitrah. You cannot mask tabi'ah as fitrah and fool people. Sooner or later, they will wake up and they will overthrow you, whether you are Fir'aun or you are other than that. Do you not see how the snake, the stick and the staff of Musa always swallowed the serpents of the magicians? Fitrah will always swallow tabi'ah. It is only a matter of when, not a matter of if. We stop here for tonight, inshallah, and then we continue tomorrow night. If you can recite a salawat ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Why do you think King Yazid, the Caliph Yazid, the Amir al-Mu'mineen of the Wahhabis Yazid, the ruler of the Muslim Empire Yazid, he is lost in history today? No one knows about him. Do you know where his grave is? Some say his grave is a garbage dump, some say it is a toilet, some say it is a furnace. But Ghareeb Hussein, Madhloom Hussein, go to Karbala and see. Go to Karbala and see. He has become the Kaaba of people's hearts. He is the Kaaba of lovers. Show me a man that has been born, that has gone to Karbala and wanted to come back, that said, I am tired, I want to leave Karbala. Show me a man who went to Karbala, came back, and does not want to go again. And I mentioned this in my Jummah khutbah. There are people who have gone for Hajj that will come back and tell you, next time I will go for Umrah, I will not go for Hajj. But there is yet a man to be born who will tell you, I have gone to Aba Abdullah and I do not want to go again. Why? Because the love for Hussein is fitri. It is wired in you. It is not instinct in the animal sense. And this is in hadith. Our imams have said to us that, oh, our Shias, you do not have to convert people to us. Just introduce us to them. Let their fitra speak. They will come to us. You do not have to convert anyone by Allah and tell them become a Shia. If their fitrah is awake, just show them who is Hussein. Who is Hussein? They will say, I love Hussein. I want Hussein. Tonight is the 9th of Muharram. And we have gathered here tonight to remember Hussein's son Ali ibn al-Akbar, the Shabih of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. Who was Ali ibn al-Akbar? It is said he looked so much like the Prophet, so much, that after the passing away of the Messenger of Allah, when people would come to Medina out of curiosity and say, what did my Rasul look like? What did my Nabi look like? They would point to Ali ibn al-Akbar and say, look at him, you have seen Rasulullah. And our fourth Imam alayhi salam says, somebody asked him, Yabna Rasulillah, out of all the shuhada in Karbala, whose musibah was the most difficult for Hussein? And the Imam cried and said, my brother Ali, Akbar's musibah was the greatest on Hussein, undoubtedly. And I will prove it to you tonight that the way Hussein went to the body of Akbar and cried, he did not go to any shaheed. Hamid ibn Muslim has said that by Allah, the manner in which Hussein cried for Ali ibn al-Akbar, he did not cry for anyone. He raised his voice so loudly that the enemies were crying. He was very, very special to Hussein. Very special to Hussein. On the way to Karbala, Imam Hussein alayhi salam had a dream in which he heard a voice. Somebody was saying that this qafila is going towards shahadat, is going towards martyrdom. He told this dream to his son Ali ibn al-Akbar. Look at how he had raised this son. He only asked one question to his father Hussein. He said, Ya Abata, awalasna ala al-haq. Are we not on the haq? Are we not on the truth? He said, Bala ya bunaya, indeed we are on the truth. He said, Idan la nubali. In that case, we do not care. whether we pounce upon death or death pounces upon us. This is Aliyun al-Akbar. On the day of Ashura, when Imam Hussein alayhi salam wanted to do Itmamul Hujjah, when he wanted to fulfill his duty towards the Ashqiya, and the time of Fajr came, he said, "My son Ali, give the Adhan. Because not only do you look like the Prophet, your voice is like Rasulullah. Let them hear the voice of the Prophet doing Adhan so that they have no excuse." How difficult it must have been for Zainab and Layla to hear that Adhan of Akbar on the day of Ashura. It must have remained etched in their memories for the rest of their lives. And all the Shuhada came to Hussein asking for permission, and Hussein said no to them. But for Ali ibn al-Akbar, because he was his son, and according to many riwayat, he was the first or one of the first ones from Banu Hashim, Hussein himself told his son, "Taqaddam ya bunayya, go my son. But before you go, go and bid farewell to Zainab. Go bid farewell to your mother. Go bid farewell to your aunts." Hamid ibn Muslim says that the women took Akbar into their tent. He says when Ali ibn al-Akbar was trying to leave, it was as if a janazah was leaving. Why? Because he said every time the tents would open up, it would close again. Every time Ali ibn al-Akbar tried coming out, Sakina would pull him back and said, "Wait one more time, my brother Ali." Every time he tried coming out, his mother would pull him back and hug him once more. Every time he tried coming out, Zainab would come pull him back in again. "My son Ali, let us do ziyarah of Rasulullah once more." When Ali ibn al-Akbar came out, Hussein tied an amama on the forehead of his son. He kissed his forehead. He said, "Go, O my son Ali, go forth into the battlefield." Ali ibn al-Akbar set out. He started heading out. As he began heading out, we are told Hussein began crying. He raised a finger towards the heavens. He said, "Allahumma ashhud ala ha'ula al-qawm, faqad baraza ilayhim ashbahun nas khulqan wa khalqan wa mantiqan bi rasulika, wa kunna idha ishtaqna ziyarat nabiyika nadharna ilayh. My Lord, bear witness against these people, for now goes before them a man, now before them goes a young man who is an exact replica of your messenger. He looks like him, his character is like him, he speaks like him. My Lord, when I wanted to do ziyarah of my grandfather Rasulullah, I used to look at my Ali ibn al-Akbar." Ali ibn al-Akbar comes into the Maidan, he begins to recite his rajas, he begins to show them that in his vein rages the blood of Ali ibn Abi Talib. He begins saying to them, "Ana Ali ibn al-Husayn ibn Ali, nahnu wa baytullahi awla bin nabi, tallahi la yahkumu fina ibn al-da'i, adribu bis-sayfi uhami an'abi, darbun ghulamin hashimiyin alawi." And he begins fighting. The enemies begin panic. One after the other, they start fighting. According to some riwayat, he kills almost 120. At one point, Umar ibn Sa'd sends a champion from his army to fight. Hussein looks and sees his son is thirsty, his son is hungry, the man before him is massive. He sends a message back. He says, "Tell the mother of Ali to pray for my son." Layla goes into the khayam. She raises her hand. "Ya man radda Yusuf ila Yaqub, rudda ilayya waladi. O you who returned Yusuf to Yaqub, let me see my Yusuf once more." Ali ibn al-Akbar returns once more. He comes to his father Hussein. Abata, did you see the kind of jihad Ali did? Did you see the kind of jihad your Akbar did? Marhaba, my son." Ali ibn al-Akbar says to him, "Abata, al-atash qad qatalani, wa thiqlu al-hadid qad ajhadani, fa hal shurbatin min ma?" "Baba, thirst has killed me. The sword is proving heavy on me. If only I could get some water, Abata, I would show these enemies how I fight for Allah today." Hussein,
Hussein begins to cry. When my son finally asked me for a favor like water, I cannot give him. He gives his ring to his son, Ali ibn al-Akbar. Akbar, put this ring in your mouth. You will have some relief from your thirst. Go, my son, now. My grandfather, Rasulullah, will quench your thirst. Go, my son, now. My father, Ali, will give you water. Hussein, Akbar gets on the horse again. He begins to head out. As Akbar is heading to the Maidan for the last time, he hears somebody falling behind. When he turns, he sees his old father is running behind him. Baba, you have already given me permission for jihad. Hussein says, yes, my son. I kash, if you have been Sahib-e Aulad, you would know how difficult it is for me to let go of you, O Akbar. My son Ali, as you go out into the battlefield, keep turning back and looking at Ghareeb Hussein. I still wish to do ziyarah of my Jad Rasulullah. Ali Hussein, Akbar goes and begins fighting again. Akbar begins doing jihad. A man by the name of Murra bin Munqiz stands up. He says, may the sins of all the Arabs be on my shoulder if I do not grieve his father this day. He brings a spear and pierces into the chest of Akbar. When Ali ibn al-Akbar removes the spear, the blade remains on his chest. A man comes and hits him on the head. A fountain of blood erupts from Akbar's head. Akbar leans forward and holds the neck of the horse. The horse is covered and blinded with the blood of Akbar. It runs straight into the enemies. فَقَتَأُوهُ إِرْبًا إِرْبًا. They begin hitting him with the swords from all sides. Ali ibn al-Akbar falls, calling out, أَبَتَا عَلَيْكَ مِنِّي السَّلَامُ. أَجْرُكُمْ عَلَى اللَّهِ. أَجْرُكُمْ عَلَى اللَّهِ. When Ali ibn al-Akbar fell to the ground, a thought crossed his mind. A thought crossed his mind. I asked my Baba for water. Perhaps he is still crying that Akbar asked me for water and I couldn't give him. He called out again, Abata, Hada Jaddi Rasulullah Kad Sakani, La Azna Ubadahu Abada. Baba Rasulullah is here, he has given me water. Baba Akbar is not thirsty anymore. Ajrukum ala Allah. The Rawi says, I saw Hussein. Sometimes he was standing and walking a little bit, then he would sit down. Then he would stand a little bit, then he would sit down. He would be saying, Ali, Ali, qatalallahu qawman qataluk. My son Ali, may Allah kill the people who killed you. The Rawi did not understand. The Rawi did not understand. Hussein was not standing and sitting. Hussein was running to his Ali, but he kept falling on the sands of Karbala. Allama Majlisi says, when Hussein came to the body of his son Akbar, Hussein saw three things. The first thing that Hussein saw was that Akbar was writhing in pain on the hot sands of Karbala. The second thing that Hussein saw was that Akbar was hiding something on his chest with his hand. The third thing, Allama Majlisi says, the third thing that Hussein saw, Zainab was already there standing over Akbar. Zainab was there crying, Wa Walada, Wa Aliya. Hussein, Ghareeb Hussein. Hussein took Zainab back towards the Khayyam. Go back, Zainab, into the tent. Hussein came to the body of his Akbar. Now the Mu'arrikhin write, when Hussein went to the body of Hur, he put the head of Hur on his lap. When Hussein went to Habib, he put the head of Habib on his lap. When Hussein went to Aun and Muhammad and Abbas, he put their heads on his lap and sat with them. When Hussein went to Qasim, his body was broken. He simply collected his Qasim and brought him back. But when Hussein came to Akbar, in Kabba alay, first he threw himself over Akbar. Then, فَوَضَعَ الْإِمَامُ خَدَّهُ عَلَى خَدِّ عَلِيٍّ. Then he placed one of his cheeks on the cheek of Akbar. Then he hugged him and cried, بُنَيَّ بُنَيَّ الدُّنْيَا بَعْدَكَ الْعَفَا. Akbar, this world has lost all meaning to me after you. Ajurukum ala Allah. Ajurukum ala Allah. Ali ibn al-Akbar still had life within him. He said, Baba, it really hurts me on my chest. Hussein moved the hand of Ali. He saw there is a blade in the chest of Ali. The Arbab of Azar say that every time Hussein tried to take the blade out, the body of Akbar rose with the blade. These Arbab of Azar say, all the Anbiya were in Karbala. I would say, oh no, your son was rebellious, but you cried for him. Turn your face, you will not be able to see this now. Ibrahim, you blindfolded yourself for Ismail. Turn your face, you will not be able to see this now. Yaqub, your Yusuf was alive, you could not bear it. Turn your face, you will not see this now. Hussein put one of his knees on the hot sands of Karbala. He held Akbar down with the other. He took hold of the blade. He turned towards Najaf. Ya Ali Madad! When the blade came out, the ruh of Akbar came out. Ajrukum ala Allah. Hussein sat beside his son Ali. He began saying, Bunayya, lakad istarahta min hammi dunya wa ghammiha. My son, you have rested from the worries and the sorrows of this world. وَبَقِيَ أَبُوكَ فَرِيدًا وَحِيدًا. But your gharib father is left all by himself. Hussein stood up. Gharib Hussein, he tried to lift the body of Akbar. He couldn't lift the body of his son. He turned towards the Khayyam. Oh, children of Banu Hashim, come and help Madhlum Hussein. Wallahi la taqata li hamliha. By Allah, I cannot carry the body of him anymore. Akbar came to the Khayyam. Zainab threw herself on Akbar. Wa Aliya, wa Akbar, wa Husayna, wa Madhluma. Matame Hussein.